This is why the ceasefire will allow him to reorganize himself, or perhaps something new can be presented during the time of the ceasefire when longer negotiation can be presented and available, and that can relieve both sides.
Okay, that's all the time we have. Let me thank my guests, Elijah Magnier, journalist and political analyst in Brussels, Marwa Osman, journalist, political analyst, and my colleague in Beirut.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Here we enlighten you with ayahs 36 through 38 from the Surah Nahl, recited by Qasim Razi.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ولقد بعثنا في كل أمة رسولا أن اعبدوا الله واجتنبوا الطاغوت فَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ هَدَى اللَّهُ وَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ حَقَّتْ عَلَيْهِ الضَّلَالَةِ فَسِيرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ فَانْظُرُوا كَيْفَ كَانَ عَاقِبَةُ كذبين إن تحرص على هداهم فإن الله لا يهدي من يضل وما لهم من ناصرين وأقسموا بالله جهد أيمانهم لا يبعث الله من يموت بلى وعدا عليه حقا ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون بلى وعدا عليه حقا ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And certainly we raise in every nation an apostle, saying, Serve Allah and shun the Satan. So there were some of them who Allah guided, and there were others against whom error was due. Therefore travel in the land, then see what was the end of the rejecters. If you desire further guidance, yet surely Allah does not guide him who leads astray, nor shall they have any helpers. And they swear by Allah with the most energetic of their oath, Allah will not raise up him who dies. Yeah, is a promise binding on him quite true, but most people do not know.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Iran successfully launches yet another domestically built research satellite into space. Two major hospitals in northern Gaza stop services due to fuel and equipment shortages as Israel's onslaught takes its toll on the health sector. And a German naval frigate mistakenly opens fire on an American MQ-9 Reaper drone over the Red Sea. Hello and welcome everybody here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Our top story for this half hour: Iran has launched yet another homegrown satellite as the country aims to bridge the gap with other nations in the race for space dominance.
Главное – подъем.
Контакт подъема. Двигатели центрального и боковых блока вышли из режима плавного сведения. 10 секунд. Параметры системы линии 700.
The new satellite, Pars-1, aboard a Soyuz launch vehicle, was blasted off from a Russian space station and successfully put into orbit 500 kilometers above Earth. The imaging and research satellite will provide a set of remote sensing data that can be used in various fields, including land, forest, water monitoring, and mining and energy transmission lines. The domestically made satellite weighs 150 kilograms and is capable of capturing images of 95% of Iranian territory. This is the second foreign launch of Iranian satellite. Last year, Iran launched Khayyam satellite from a space launching pad in Kazakhstan. Iran is among the world's top 10 countries capable of developing and launching satellites. Our correspondent Farzana Ashuriyun, who's present at Iran's Space Research Institute during the satellite launch from a Russian base, told us more about the country's achievements in this field.
Actually, this satellite is called Pars-1. It's an imaging satellite. It's a research one. It's a research measurement satellite, and which is designed and constructed, as I mentioned, by the young scientists and Iranian scientists. And this launch was announced by Iran's communication minister Zarepour yesterday, noting that this actually launch is in order to develop international interactions and to develop the international relations between the two countries, between Iran Iran and Russia, and we know that this launch is happening despite the unilateral Western sanctions, and we know that this is not actually the first time that Iran has done such thing and has launched a satellite more than 11 times. This actually proud moment has happened. And last month, what I can tell about the history of these kind of activities that Iran has, last month Iran successfully put into orbit 3 homegrown satellites with a minimum altitude of 450 kilometers and a maximum of 1,100 kilometers above the Earth's surface. And people are still here and watching this proud moment, and we're all proud.
In Iran, candidates vying for seats in parliament and the assembly of experts have wrapped up their election campaigns. Millions of Iranians will be heading to the polls on Friday to cast their ballots for the 290-member parliament and 88-seat assembly of experts. Iran's interior ministry says over 15,000 candidates are competing in the parliamentary elections this year, a record. Since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979, Iranian legislative body called Majlis is elected for a 4-year term. Hundreds of candidates are also in the fray for the Assembly of Experts, a deliberative body elected for 8 years. In his recent speech, the leader of Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, called for a massive voter turnout for elections, which he described as the main pillar of the Islamic Republic. Israel's onslaught on the Gaza Strip is now in its 146th day as the regime's indiscriminate strikes kill more civilians in central and southern parts of the territory. Israeli airstrikes killed at least 6 Palestinians in a town near Khan Yunis. Casualties were also reported following the Israeli bombardment of a residential block in Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza. Meanwhile, Gaza's health sector remains a main target for Israeli strikes. The Al-Auda Hospital in northern Gaza has stopped its services due to severe shortage of fuel and medical supplies. Kamal Adwan Hospital, which was the last hospital in service in northern Gaza, has also stopped working after shutdown of its electric generator. The Israeli genocide has so far killed nearly 30,000 Gazans, leaving over 70,000 and 300 others injured. Well, the U.S.-managed Israeli genocidal war continues to take innocent lives and leave a trail of destruction in the Gaza Strip. Israel's bombing and shelling campaign since October the 7th has turned a large part of Gaza into rubble. The spokesman for the Gaza Health Ministry gives us details about the catastrophic situation in the besieged territory.
The estimated casualties of the Israeli aggression stand at approximately 30,000 martyrs and over 70,500 injuries. This points to a systematic policy by the Israeli occupation of committing genocide in the Gaza Strip. Furthermore, this aligns with reports indicating the disappearance of 10,000 individuals. 70% of these martyrs are children and women, in addition to nearly 10% of the martyrs being elderly. Therefore, the Israeli occupation is carrying out a clear process of executing families. There are thousands of families that have been completely annihilated.
They are 30,000 martyrs. I don't know what the Israelis want from us and why they killed this number. It is a genocide of the Palestinian people. This is what I see, a genocide. Who bombs a tower on civilian residents, including women and children?
We've never witnessed such a number before. I'm 52 years old and I've lived through many wars, including the 82 war, which we heard about when we were young, as well as the first and second intifadas. The number of 30,000 martyrs has never been reached in such a short period, 4 months, 5 months. The intifada lasted for years, yet this number wasn't reached, nor was the number of injuries. The goal here is killing, not just displacement, but murder and extermination.
This has become a genocide unlike anything we've ever seen. Everyone is suffering inside these tents. We're dying slowly in addition to high cost of living and the people enduring pain. We are suffering greatly. We have been displaced about 100 times.
The Israeli regime is using starvation as a weapon against Palestinians in its genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. Now, Palestinian health officials say 6 children have died due to severe malnutrition and dehydration in northern Gaza. According to medical sources, 4 infants in Kamal Adwan Hospital and 2 others in Al-Shifa Medical Complex have died of malnutrition. 7 other infants at Kamal Adwan Hospital are in critical condition. Last week, the Global Nutrition Cluster documented a steep rise in malnutrition among children, as well as pregnant and breastfeeding women in Gaza. Nearly 21 weeks of Israeli military aggression has made food and safe water incredibly scarce, compromising women and children's nutrition and causing a surge of acute malnutrition. The UN Humanitarian Office says the entire population of Gaza faces a crisis or worse levels of food insecurity. Israel's relentless bombings of the Gaza Strip and an obstacle to aid delivery have left Palestinians without food and other essentials. The UN has also warned that a quarter of Gaza's population is just a step away from famine. The lack of food has forced a displaced family to eat cactus leaves to survive. Let's take a listen to their harrowing narratives.
Today we are living in famine. We have exhausted everything. There is nothing left to eat. We used to eat a plant called mallow. It no longer exists. There used to be carrot and that is gone. There is nothing left in the markets. So we resorted to the last option, the cactus. We eat cactus even with its thorns. We even feed the young children cactus. A little girl is eating cactus instead of milk, instead of meat, instead of eggs. Today we can still find cactus. In a week the cactus will no longer be available and we will live on nothing. We will become dead. I, in approximately 1 month, and I have a photo, have lost some 30 kilograms this month. 1 month. I have lost 30 kilograms. Why? Because there is no food. This is our food now in the northern Gaza Strip. There is nothing else. Everything is gone. There is nothing left.
There is nothing. I have newborn babies. What should I feed them? They have become anemic. They have contracted due to lack of food and nutrition. So now we are eating cactus. I also ate from it. I ate cactus. I had cactus for lunch. We thank God there is nothing left for us to eat.
Palestinian fighters keep putting stiff resistance to Israeli forces in Gaza as fighting on the ground rages on. The military wing of the Hamas resistance movement says it has targeted a group of Israeli soldiers in Gaza City with mortars. The Qassam Brigade says it also shelled Israeli armored vehicles there. Meanwhile, fighting continued in the southern city of Khan Yunis, where the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement says its fighters hit an Israeli Merkava tank as well as a military bulldozer. Israel has so far confirmed the killing of 243 of its troopers since the regime launched a ground invasion of Gaza in late October. Palestinian groups say the regime is intentionally hiding the real number of casualties among its forces to avoid the Israeli public anger. And a German naval frigate taking part in a European mission in the Red Sea has mistakenly opened fire on an American MQ-9 Reaper drone, nearly shooting it down. According to German media, the frigate fired 2 missiles at the drone, but both crashed into the sea because of a technical defect. Germany's defense ministry has confirmed the incident, which took place on Monday. It said the frigate opened fire after efforts to identify an unknown drone were unsuccessful, and none of Germany's allies reported a drone in the area. The frigate was deployed to the Red Sea as part of an EU mission to allegedly secure international shipping from attacks by Yemen's army. During past months, Yemen's armed forces have launched numerous attacks on Israel-linked ships in support of the Palestinian people in Gaza. Iraq is moving forward to end the U.S.-led international coalition mission in the country. The growing anti-U.S. sentiment in the nation has led the government to push the coalition for a timetable for the withdrawal of its troops from Iraq. Muslim Salim has the report from Baghdad.
As a result of a broad consensus in Iraq to end the presence of U.S.-led international coalition forces from the country, both the Iraqi nation and government made it crystal clear that these military forces are no longer needed. Iraqi National Security Advisor Qasem al-A'raji stated that all political factions in the country have agreed on the need to end the presence of U.S.-led military coalition purportedly formed to fight Daesh terrorist group.
Today, we're witnessing the negotiation with the international coalition forces, and honestly, what makes us, the Iraqi people, exasperated is the insistence by the U.S. to keep its troops on our land to have an intervention in the military scene of Iraq and neighboring Syria.
Iraqi Prime Minister Mohammed Shia al-Sudani stated that the Western Alliance mission will end at the Baghdad government's official request. He also said that the government is setting a date for the start of bilateral committee talks, which includes representatives of the military coalition, to put arrangements to end the presence of international coalition forces in Iraq permanently.
We have collected more than 100 signatures and prepared the legal draft to end the international coalition mission in Iraq. And we pledge before God to our people that we will enact the law to expel the foreign forces from our land.
The demands to end U.S. military presence in Iraq are not new. After Washington's assassination of top Iraqi and Iranian anti-terror commanders, General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mehdi al-Mohandis, 4 years ago, Iraqi parliament voted to expel foreign forces who can endanger security and stability in Iraq and jeopardize civil peace.
Following the recent attacks on anti-terror forces and the continued violations on the country's sovereignty, the Iraqi nation and government are now determined to end the presence of foreign military forces to prevent any further escalations that can endanger the stability and security of Iraq. Muslim Salem, Baghdad.
And a virtual exhibition dubbed Iran and 100 Years of Multilateralism has opened in Geneva, highlighting Iran's efforts as an active member of international organizations over the past century. Gisumi Shahadi has more.
Celebrating Iran's efforts and the evolution of its multilateral cooperation over the past century, the virtual exhibition of images, documents, and videos entitled Iran and 100 Years of Multilateralism looks at key milestones and achievements of Iran as an active member in international organizations, illustrating them with rarely seen historical photos, documents, and contemporary visuals.
The idea of setting up an exhibition like this one was proposed about 7 months ago. The main objective was to create a reliable source for research purposes. However, when we started collecting information and documents, we realized that the role that Iran has played in international organizations has been so significant that it deserves to be presented to the public.
This is also in line with Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi's approach.
Multilateralism is very important. It is the only way to circumvent U.S. sanctions. Our people should be united, and I'm pleased to see that Iran is promoting multilateralism. BRICS is a symbol of this new policy, giving the Global South a voice.
This comes as the foreign minister has just wrapped up a two-day trip to Geneva, packed with bilateral meetings, not only with his counterparts from different countries from around the world discussing issues of bilateral concern, but also with high-ranking officials in the United Nations, including UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, the High Commissioner for Human Rights, and President of the International Committee of the Red Cross, ICRC. All in line with rallying support for Palestinians under constant Israeli attacks.
I'm here in Geneva to reiterate Iran's stance on the current developments. Our government's policy is based on creating a network of cooperation and promoting multilateralism, because we believe this is the best way to overcome the challenges that we are facing.
Meanwhile, Iran's foreign minister used the opportunity to draw attention to Israel's long history of unlawful behavior during the UN conference on disarmament.
The Iranian foreign minister called on the international community to demand the immediate nuclear disarmament of the Israeli regime.
And the special high-level meeting held on the sidelines of the 55th session of the UN Human Rights Council on the dire humanitarian situation in Gaza once again highlighted Iran's role as a country that prioritizes multilateral cooperation. Gisumi Shahmadi, Geneva.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee. So recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday 5 things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, Thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
Leaders meeting with thousands of people from East Azerbaijan province. Thousands of people from East Azerbaijan province had a meeting with the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, on Sunday, 18th of February. The meeting took place at the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniyah in Tehran, on the occasion of the 46th anniversary of the uprising of the people of Tabriz on 19th of February 1978, which was a key step in the victory of the Islamic Revolution the following year in 1979. On that day, in February of 1978, the courageous people of Tabriz and other towns of East Azerbaijan province took to the streets to mark the 40th day after the uprising of the people of Qom, and thus started a chain of demonstrations and protests which shook the foundations of the Pahlavi regime to its very core, and eventually led to its collapse. In this program, we discuss the leaders' remarks and points of view expressed at this meeting. Please stay with us. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, had a meeting with a large number of people from East Azerbaijan province on Sunday, 18th of February, congratulating everyone present on the festivities of Sha'baniya, the birth anniversary of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, the birth anniversary of Imam Sajjad, peace be upon him, and the birth anniversary of Hazrat Abul Fazl al-Abbas, peace be upon him, and Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance. The leader thanked the people of Iran for their enthusiastic presence in the 11th of February national rallies and marches. The leader said, "Indeed, people worked hard and displayed their enthusiasm in all parts of the country, in all the provinces and cities, and even in villages and remote areas. There are some who hoped to see the Iranian nation disheartened, and they were taken by surprise. There are others who wish the Iranian nation gradually forgets the 11th of February rallies and celebrations, but they too were taken by surprise. This year, the Iranian people truly showed their proud revolutionary spirit to the world on 11th of February, and I am sincerely grateful to the nation." The leader added, "Of course, in addition to expressing my gratitude to our dear people, I would also like to sincerely thank those who were able to ensure the security of these nationwide rallies and marches with God's help. Their work should also be greatly appreciated." Commenting further, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "What we need to do is to learn from the past for our present and future. 11th of February 1979 marks the birth of the Islamic Revolution. It was an exceptional, tumultuous birthday. With the passage of time, the Islamic Revolution has grown and become more powerful and well-established. It has become more powerful and its viewpoint has become more penetrating. The revolution is now 45 years old. During these 45 years, it has faced myriad experiences, events, wars, confrontations with unbelievers, confrontations with hypocrites, and confrontations with political enemies, and all kinds of seditions and conspiracies. The revolution has faced all of these things. But how is the revolution defined? It is defined as that which is in your heart. The revolution is you, the people, and the ruling system's ability to navigate and overcome these challenges." As for his remarks, the leader said, "There are two general duties for the entire nation, and especially for young people. But what are these two duties? One is the responsibility of looking at oneself, and the other is the responsibility of looking at the enemy. These are two duties, and let me explain what I mean by the duty of looking at oneself. Looking at oneself means assessing and evaluating ourselves. We need to assess who we are and how we are. We should not forget ourselves. The Almighty has stated in the Holy Quran, in Ayah 19 of Surah Hash, "And be not like those who forget Allah, so He made them forget themselves." They forgot God and He punished them. What was their punishment? It was that they forgot themselves. If we are unable to evaluate and assess ourselves correctly, or if we are incapable of doing so, this can lead to disastrous consequences. We become like a patient who is suffering from a terrible disease that eventually results in his or her death, but he or she is not even aware of it. Well, the fate of this person is obvious. In order to save ourselves, we must find out what type of disease we have so that we can cure it, and that is the first step. Commenting further, Ayatollah Khamenei said, "Secondly, simply being aware of our weakness is not sufficient. We must also recognize our strengths." The Islamic Revolution pursued a number of goals from the very beginning. We have attained some of these goals, and these are important, but other goals remain unattained. In some places, we have strengths. In other places, we have weaknesses. We must strengthen, preserve, and appreciate the strengths while attending to our weaknesses. The enemy has a policy that wants to make you forget your own strengths and not realize your own capabilities. This is a hostile policy, of course, that exists. Therefore, we need to recognize our own strengths. Turning to the Pahlavi regime, the leader said, "Perhaps our greatest achievement is the overthrow of an oppressive, unjust, irreligious, dependent, tyrannical system that was the monarchy. This isn't something small, it is the most significant accomplishment of the Islamic Revolution. The monarchical system, which was rooted in the country, was a system that didn't value or respect the people, nor did it involve them in the administration of the country. It didn't care about the people. When I was in exile in Baluchistan province, even the governor of that province hadn't bothered to visit that relatively big city that I had been relocated to. In contrast, our current president visits remote areas, villages and small towns all around the country, and is present among the people. These two situations are very different. They didn't care about the people, and the people had no role in governing the country." Commenting further, the leader said, "Today, the younger generation have accomplished remarkable feats that are widely known and recognized, such as the achievements in the military sector that all of you have heard about. Yet, there are numerous other sectors that most people are unaware of, such as the industrial sector, peaceful nuclear technology, medical sciences and the pharmaceutical sector, as well as various other sectors where significant achievements have been made after the Islamic Revolution. Who has achieved these? Of course, young Iranians. They're the primary driving engine behind our progress. Added to this is self-belief in international confrontations. The Iranian nation no longer feels inadequate or inferior when confronted by the dominant world powers. It was not like this back then. In those days, political representatives selected by the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, regardless of their personal issues, lacked the initiative to actively engage in political matters. Instead, they were only the subordinates of the governments of the global powers that were dominating them at the time, such as the United States, Britain, France, and various other countries. Therefore, creating a sense of self-belief, being self-confident in global confrontations, and promoting the ideas and values of the Islamic Revolution are also notable achievements of the revolution. In further comments, the leader said, another achievement of the Islamic Revolution is the halting of the spreading of Western culture as a superior culture. It was not like this before the revolution. Western culture was considered to be superior. While this mindset has not been entirely removed, significant progress has been made. In the 4.5 decades since the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Another achievement is that national services are no longer confined solely to the capital city, Tehran. Before the Islamic Revolution, essential services and public amenities were primarily available in Tehran and few other big cities. However, today, that situation has changed drastically. Many services and amenities are readily available throughout the country, in villages, towns, and cities up and down the nation. Further comments, the leader said, another great achievement is the education and training of globally renowned scientists, surgeons, engineers, and outstanding nuclear scientists, which the Islamic Republic of Iran has been able to bring up. These are recognized and respected worldwide. Turning to the responsibilities of government and the parliament, the Majlis, the leader said, what are the responsibilities of the government, the parliament, Majlis, and other official authorities? Determination, working with diligence and uprightness, being honest with the people, and prioritizing national interests over personal gains are the responsibilities of officials. Praise God, our high-ranking officials today possess these qualities, but it is essential for these positive traits to exist in all government and judicial branches. In further comments, the leader said, the duty of the elite is to identify weaknesses, recognize the dangers, devise strategies to address them, and offer intellectual support to the government, the Islamic councils, and government officials. The elite have these duties. In a vibrant, thriving society, the elite must have a sense of duty, and these obligations they must fulfill. Young people also have a duty. The primary duty of young people, of course, is to build up the necessary characteristics within themselves in order to play roles in future matters. The youth can play a vital role. The youth should be prepared to participate in various fields and prepare themselves to bear heavy burdens of responsibility. They are the primary driving engine behind society. They need to prepare themselves in terms of various moral and scientific characteristics, etc., in order to assume an active role in propelling the country forward. The leader added, the general public has also responsibilities, but their responsibilities are different. But one essential point to note is that officials, elite, young people, students, clerics, etc. must keep in mind that everything we're asking them to do is a form of jihad. But what does this jihad mean? Jihad is an effort that one takes against the enemy. This is the definition of jihad, and all of us must strive to accomplish our duties. Elsewhere in his comments, Ayatollah Khamenei said, our second duty is to look at the enemy. Looking at the enemy means we need to keep in mind that the enemy exists. The enemy is there, and we must not become neglectful of the enemy. The enemy is deceitful and cunning with various tricks up its sleeve. We should not assume that the enemy is weak and incapable. In further comments, the leader added, an important factor to achieve victory is knowing the enemy and their capabilities. And this is an essential point. The leader concluded his remarks by wishing everyone God's blessing and success.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Tonight on Exposé, the Israeli occupation forces' attack on Rafah was presented to the world as a successful rescue operation, when in reality it was a blatant attack on the last safe haven for Palestinian civilians in Gaza. Now, Zionist Israeli media accused their Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of lying to the world when he speaks about taking out Hamas or releasing all the hostages. And 97% of Arab respondents felt psychological stress during the war in Gaza, while 92% believe the Palestinian cause is an issue for all Arabs and not just the Palestinian people. Welcome to Exposé, the show that leaves no stone unturned. Ladies and gents, welcome to Exposé. Now, the Israeli occupation's military launched a wave of air raids and artillery fire in southern Gaza, forcing Palestinians to flee overcrowded Rafah in advance of a feared ground invasion that world leaders have already condemned. However, condemnation does not find its way in Western and Zionist media platforms. Rather, whitewashing Israeli entity crime seems to be the go-to story for most of those platforms. Let us hear from Fuad Itayim, our broadcast expert and writer at The Cradle, for more about it in Fake News Exposé. Now, the Israeli occupation forces carried out a massacre in Rafah last week, as they portrayed it as a victorious rescue operation that matched their American Super Bowl ad theme. While the hostages were actually not rescued on the 12th of February, they were rescued on the 2nd of February. Now, Fuad, that sounds like a scene from a B-rated Hollywood movie, if I'm correct here.
Definitely.
What happened exactly?
Okay, so since the massacre in Rafah last week, which killed 100 people, over 100 people, including women and children, mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of reports that the prisoners, the Israeli prisoners that they said were freed during that military operation, as they called it, were actually released earlier than they said.
Two men taken captive by Hamas on the 7th of October were rescued on Monday by Israeli military. During the early morning raid, Israel carried out airstrikes that the Hamas-run health ministry said killed around 100 people in the southern city of Rafah in Gaza. The two men, Luis Har and Fernando Marman, had been kidnapped in the kibbutz of Nir Yitzhak and had spent 128 days in captivity. But according to some social media users, Har and Marman were not freed during this assault on Monday, but were actually rescued by the Israel Defense Forces, or the IDF, more than a month ago. Some shared what they claim is a screenshot of an article in Haaretz, an Israeli newspaper, which says the two hostages were released in an operation by the IDF on the 2nd of February 2024. Others tweeted this screenshot of another alleged article appearing this time in the Times of Israel, which claims one of the hostages, Luis Har, was rescued in December 2023. Some believe this is proof Israel staged a fake hostage liberation as an excuse to attack the city of Rafah. We looked at the Haaretz website and we found the original article about the hostages released, and it does say the two men were released on the 12th of February, so the correct date. This means the screenshot that has been circulating online has been doctored. As for the second screenshot, which shows the Times of Israel article, well, we can check using a tool called Wayback Machine, which shows us how a web page has been modified over time.
So far, even Zionist media was saying that the operation might not have happened in February 12, actually in February 2, mm-hmm. or in December, but they then reneged on what they said. What was that about?
Listen, it's very possible that Haaretz went in and changed the date afterwards, because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, we know that Israeli media is subject to strict military censorship mm-hmm. laws. So if the army says they have to change something, mm-hmm. they're going to have to change it. But there was actually a Mayadeen report mm-hmm. that came out afterwards that said that these two prisoners, mm-hmm. first of all, they were released. They were actually released on the 12th of February, but mm-hmm. not in a heroic military operation like mm-hmm. the Israelis said. Mm-hmm. These two captives were, according to the report, were actually being held not by Hamas, but by a Palestinian family in Rafah.
Wow.
And the story is that the Israelis agreed to a deal where they would pay a sum of money to the family for these prisoners.
So that might have been possibly what happened instead of what Israel said. What do you have more for us on that?
The next thing we have is this CBN report, mm-hmm. which jumps directly into Israeli propaganda about mm-hmm. Rafah. It's talking about how Hamas rules the city, how the city of Rafah is key to Hamas's survival. Mm-hmm. And it goes on to talk about, you know, these stories of Hamas diverting humanitarian aid, mm-hmm. having a stranglehold over aid. So
Israel's operation into Rafah has begun with airstrikes. Since it's on the Egyptian border, Prime Minister Netanyahu promised coordination with Egypt. For now, Hamas rules Rafah, a key city to its survival. Some analysts believe Hamas uses the area to keep a stranglehold on the humanitarian aid coming into Gaza, a major way to control the people of Gaza. Hamas uses more than 1 million Gazans who have fled to Rafah as human shields. NBC is reporting Israel is open to allowing Hamas mastermind Yahya Sinwar to go into exile in exchange for the release of all the hostages and the end of Hamas rule in the Gaza Strip.
Wow. So what happened right there?
Well, they're basically saying with zero evidence that Hamas has some kind of stranglehold over humanitarian aid in Rafah, and that this is how Hamas controls the population of Gaza and the Palestinian people. Mm-hmm. Actually, the other day it was reported that even U.S. intelligence believes there's no evidence for any such thing. Mm-hmm. There's no evidence, even U.S. intelligence said it, there's no evidence that Hamas diverts humanitarian aid, has a stranglehold on it in any way, mm-hmm. or uses it for its own benefit. Mm-hmm.
That seems weird
enough. So the next thing we have is a CBS reporter sitting down for an interview with what she says is a Hamas commander in the occupied West Bank. Mm-hmm. Of course, Hamas's presence in the occupied West Bank is used by Western media to justify more violence there.
Support for Hamas has soared from 14 to 42% since October 7th, according to a recent poll. We met a Hamas commander at an undisclosed location in the West Bank.
Are you a wanted man?
I am, indeed.
Calling himself Abu Abed, he joined 9 years ago when he was just 16. Almost half that time was spent in jail. Now, he is a Hamas recruiter.
Are you seeing more young people joining Hamas here in the West Bank since October 7th?
For sure. All the Palestinian people are standing by Hamas. I give the fighters guidance. When Israeli forces enter, I tell them what to do and how to open fire.
So far, we're supposed to believe that Deborah Pata actually met with a Hamas reporter in the West Bank. Is that supposedly true?
Well, as we can tell from the first sentence, the accent sounds entirely fake. Mm-hmm. Anyone who speaks Arabic will know that. And we also know from the past, especially the last few months, mm-hmm. is that Israel regularly uses crisis actors and impersonators mm-hmm. when they want to portray evidence for something that they don't have.
It is true.
That's not to say that there isn't Hamas in the West Bank. There is Hamas in the West Bank. There's Palestinian Islamic Jihad. There's mm-hmm. Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade. There are many, many affiliates of the Gaza resistance in the West Bank. Mm-hmm. But they don't look like this, and mm-hmm. they don't sound like this. And, of course, they're too busy resisting the occupation to sit down with a news team of this kind.
Definitely. I second that. But I want to thank you very much for your analysis with
us, Fuad. Thank you so much for having me.
Today for being with us. Ladies and gents, let's move to mainstream media expose. When we or any other media platform says that the Israeli regime represented by its Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu lies about their genocide in Gaza, about killing Hamas leaders in Gaza, or about saving their hostages, we don't say it out of spite. We simply repeat what the leaders of the Israeli regime themselves are saying. With us is Ms. Julia Qasim, our mainstream media expert, to tell us more about this. Thank you very much for being with us. Julia, what do you have for us today?
Thank you, Marwa. Hello. Well, indeed, the Zionist media has been all over the place, mm-hmm. accusing the Zionist PM Benjamin Netanyahu mm-hmm. of lying to the Israeli public, mm-hmm. the Israeli occupation public, and the world when he speaks about talking about Hamas, taking them out, or releasing all the hostages, which everybody knows at this point is mm-hmm. not true. The Zionist Jerusalem Post, for one, quoted former IOF Deputy Chief Yair Golan, saying that when Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu tells the Israeli entity public that it is possible to kill entire Hamas leadership and to save all the Israeli hostages at all time, he's lying. Mm-hmm. So, speaking from Reichman University, Golan said that Netanyahu's cabinet must first return the hostages, which is necessitated by stopping the aggression on Gaza. Only later can they help. Can they hope to reach Hamas, with the key being preventing Hamas from retaining control over Gaza. Mm-hmm. But of course, this is necessitated by the ceasefire that the Zionist entity has rejected three times. So Golan in the piece also even accused Netanyahu's policy of weakening the Palestinian Authority and stabilizing Hamas in 2009 as being one of the key sources leading to the October 7th Israeli entity failure to stop Hamas's operation.
So now he's pinning what happened in October 7th on the Benjamin Netanyahu government to begin with.
Right, and also going full circle in this narrative mm-hmm. that he inadvertently propped up Hamas's power, which is a false narrative that mm-hmm. you hear all the time. But as the continuous series of whitewashing the Zionist crimes against the Palestinian people goes on, the Wall Street Journal published an opinion piece written by none other than the Zionist entity president himself, Isaac Herzog.
Wow.
It's entitled "The Case Against Israel Rests on Lies." So it claims that South Africa grossly distorted in its presentation a quote by Herzog himself to the ICJ in its ongoing investigation mm-hmm. of the Israeli genocide. So in this piece, Herzog was clearly frustrated because South Africa was very tentative to his words, taken from a news conference on October 12th, just 5 days after the Al-Aqsa flood operation began. The quote, which included a line that, quote, "the entire nation out there that is responsible," end quote, referring to the Palestinians. Herzog did not like the fact that his own words condemn him and basically are evidence that of his genocidal mm-hmm. intent, because, of course, they justified the killing of Palestinian civilians.
Mm-hmm. And that quote was used against the Zionist Israeli entity in the ICJ, wasn't it?
South Africa used what Herzog described as a misconstrued quote at The Hague to prove Zionist Israel's intent to commit genocide and thus invoke a jurisdiction of the court.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then in the same article, the Wall Street Journal publishes a video of the Zionist Israeli ambassador to the UN, Gilad Erdan, mm-hmm. justifying his regime's genocide in Gaza. So let's hear what he had to say in the video.
Well, Erdan usually has a lot to say.
How can one call for a ceasefire and at the same time claim to seek a solution to the conflict? After all, anyone who supports a ceasefire basically supports Hamas' continued reign of terror in Gaza.
What was he talking about?
So you see, Marwa, the Zionist Israeli ambassador to the UN openly claimed that anyone who asks for a ceasefire in Gaza mm-hmm. basically supports what Erdogan called Hamas' continued reign of terror in Gaza. Mm-hmm. A video published to support an opinion piece by the Israeli head of state maintaining that accusations of genocide against the Israeli regime are false.
Mm-hmm. So he's basically saying that if anyone says, oh, look, Israel is bombing civilians, they should stop, actually supports what he said, violence and terrorism. I think that's like literally what the definition of playing victim is that we have always seen the Zionist entity play when it comes to something that is not against its interests, doesn't it?
Exactly, and mm-hmm. just invokes this ad hominem. Everything that is criticism against their genocide is Hamas.
Mm-hmm. I want to thank you very much, Ms. Julia Qasim, for being with us to talk more about the what the mainstream media has been telling us for the past week, especially about Rafah and about the horrors that the Israeli entity has been putting against the people in Gaza. Now, ladies and gents, let's move on to social media expose. Now, Now, social media platforms have been the perfect place to expose the Zionist-Israeli genocidal intentions towards Palestinians and the Western regime's false claims of securing human rights and freedom of expression. Here is our own social media expert, Ms. Sima Itayim, who is also an editor at The Cradle. Sima, where has that train, if you will, of Western faux freedom of speech stopped this week?
Thanks for having me, Marwa. So the train has stopped at the Tech Transparency Project station. Mm-hmm. Tech Transparency Project is an information and research hub that seeks to hold big tech accountable. Mm-hmm. So anyway, they've published a few days ago, on February 14, an investigation, what they claim to be an investigation. They are bothered that X is allowing freedom of speech for certain individuals and entities in West Asia.
Wow.
So Tech Transparency Project, who is, by the way, funded by openly Zionist entities and individuals, including David Magerman, Open Society Foundations, which we all know, Craig Newmark, Philanthropies, Bohemian Foundation, and Omid Yad Network, found that Elon Musk's X, formerly Twitter, appears to be selling premium services to individuals, groups, and countries that are deemed to be a threat to the U.S. national security.
Oh, the horror.
Right. So TTP, Tech Transparency Project, pointed out more than a dozen X accounts belonging to U.S.-sanctioned entities that had a blue check mark. Mm-hmm. Now, the blue check mark requires the purchase of a premium subscription. Along with the check marks, which grant legitimacy, X promises a variety of perks for premium accounts, like being able to post longer text and videos and greater visibility for certain posts. So some of the accounts that TTP was irritated by included Lebanese Hezbollah officials and media, Ansar Allah-affiliated media, and Iranian media, of course, including Press TV.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would like to remind our viewers that Press TV is specially designated national subject to U.S.-imposed Iran sanctions for 2018 executive order and secondary sanctions because they rule the world, don't they?
Yeah.
According to what's known as the OFAC's database. Now, the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcast, also the IRIB, is also a specially designated national subject to U.S. People need to know this. About what the U.S. is doing. It's under a U.S. sanction that says Iran Threat Reduction and Syria Human Rights Act of 2012 and a secondary action. So the CIA expects the X platform to abide by the CIA's own illegal sanctions now?
Pretty much. And a lot of people have been triggered by this, not just TTP. This rage against the Elon Musk machine, which we've seen for several reasons in recent months. So this brought about some posts on X, like that of this account, Pete Quiley, at PQ Politics, who attempted to kickstart some kind of campaign with hashtags that were never picked up to become visible, let alone trending even.
Well, that's
Hashtag Elon Musk is a national security threat, and hashtag Elon Musk is a traitor.
I'm surprised that didn't pick up.
Right. So he's a national security threat for allowing national security threats to have premium features on X,
I guess. To express their thought.
Yes. Another tweet by Spyro's Ghost with an ironic handle, at anti-toxic people, claimed that terrorists are paying for checkmarks on X, as a report shows that Elon Musk's X has accepted payments for subscriptions from entities barred from doing business in the United States, a potential violation of sanctions.
A violation of sanctions, but it's not a violation of an entire human rights law and human rights principles to bomb indiscriminately people all over the world. But if you have those same people who are being bombed having a voice, it becomes so much triggering, doesn't
it? Exactly. And it's you know, state media is only a problem when it depends what state that is, according to them. So.
Well, Sima, it's always a pleasure to have you with us to comment on what's happening on social media. Thank you very much
you.
For your time and your contribution to Exposé. Now, ladies and gents, stay with us. We will go now to Figures Exposé. Now, a new poll shows that Zionist Israel's war in Gaza is taking a heavy mental toll on people across West Asia and North Africa. The Qatar-based Arab Center for Research and Policy Studies announced the results of the survey of 8,000 men and women from 16 Arab countries carried out from December 12, 2023 to January 5th,
2024. Now, a staggering 97% of respondents say they felt psychological stress during this war on Gaza, with 84% of them reporting experiencing this to a great degree. Now, almost 4 in 5 said they follow news about the brutal campaign every day or maybe several times a week. Now, a majority of respondents said that Arab governments should suspend ties of normalization of relations with the Israelis as the top of second most important measure to stop the war. The survey also found that 92% believe the Palestinian cause is an issue for all Arabs and not just the Palestinian people, up from 70% from 2022. The same poll also found that 69% of Arabs stand with the people of Gaza and the Palestinian resistance, Hamas. Now, let us move on to the most notable expose voices for this week. Now, all eyes were on Rafah last week, as they are this week too, after the February 12 massacre committed by Zionist Israel. One notable video on Instagram by the Palestinian youth movement with 513,000 followers base posted a video saying that the U.S.-backed Zionist genocide on Gaza has reached a new urgent stage with nowhere further south for Palestinians to evacuate. Here's the Palestinian youth movement's voice.
All eyes on Rafah. At about 3 a.m. Gaza local time, the genocidal Israeli regime began its strikes on Rafah, on land, air, and sea. Over 100 martyrs and over 250 injured have been reported in the U.S.-funded Israeli strikes, targeting homes and mosques where many were sheltering. Rafah now houses about 1.4 million, which whom are crowded into displacement tents and apartment buildings, have nowhere else to go. With their backs against the closed Egyptian border, the Israelis have begun their merciless bombing of civilians. According to the local Kuwait hospital, in the span of 1 hour, 100-plus civilians have been confirmed killed, most of them children, and 250-plus injured, numbers that have likely increased. This is all after Netanyahu, who rejected a peace deal for ceasefire, claiming that they will continue until total victory. Since the start of Israel's murderous campaign, which has resulted in over 28,000 Palestinian martyrs, total victory has always meant ethnic cleansing and erasure of the Palestinian people. We call on the U.S. and its Western allies to stop arming Israel and for an immediate and permanent ceasefire.
Now, another voice on TikTok that became an eye-opening account when it comes to design.